Good evening and welcome to tonight's No Name Ever podcast. A little bit different today because we don't have Adam with us, so no producer, so no music, no sound effects or anything like that. But it should still be a good show. Obviously, there's the Rovers game to talk about. And my guests today are Kevin Robinson, James Bird, Andy Devaney and Patrick Walson. So we'll kick off with the Rovers game. Obviously, Burnley drew 1-1 in the derby. James, what did you make of the game?
We were robbed. I mean, just the easiest way to put it. I think it was a typical Burnley-Blackburn game from recent times in that I don't think either team had a huge number of clear-cut opportunities, but we were clearly the better side.
Do you think we did enough to win the game then? We didn't create a great deal overall, did we?
No, I think that's probably ultimately why we didn't win. I was surprised when we only made one substitute as well. See, Junior did have an impact scoring, but I thought that maybe we'd want to go a bit more attacking and probably take Scott Arfield off as well.
After the equaliser, you mean? To try and get a winner?
Well, even before. I thought we probably would have gone for it a bit more than we did, but we didn't.
We'll talk about the substitutes a little bit more later. Andy, you were quite upset after the match, weren't you? Have you calmed down now?
Just about.
What did you make of the game? How do you think it went?
I think we were robbed totally and utterly yet again off them cheating scumbags. I mean, if it was the opposite way around and it were Duff taking down David Dunn, then we'd all be congratulating, I guess. But I think Lee Williamson should be banned for life from the turf.
Well, again, we'll come on to that later, but the letter of the law, all the ref could do was send him off, I suppose. And like you say, if it was the other way around and Jordan Rhodes was through on goal, then we'd want Michael Duff or Jason Shackle to take him down. So it's a difficult one, but it does seem unfair when Ings was through on goal and probably would have scored. So, yeah, we'll come back to that later.
No, probably. Kevin,
well, you would back him, wouldn't you? But you can't say it was definitely going to be a goal. Kevin, we'll come to you. What did you think of the game? Do you think we were good value for the win, or was one all about fair?
I think you could definitely make a case either way, but I think definitely overall we edged it a lot more than they did. I think it was a really entertaining game overall. Actually, I think despite not being loads of clear cut chances,
I thought it was quite end to end a lot of the match. It was always
something going on. There was no real moments in the match where. I think most matches you have a 10-20 minute spell where nothing really happens, but I don't think that happened on Saturday. I don't know if it's just because of the tension of it being the Rovers match, it felt a little bit more exciting, but yeah, I thought it was a really entertaining match, but we deserve the win. I can understand what Blackburn Rovers fans are saying, but they stepped up in the second half. Yeah, we were a lot more dominant in the first half than we were in the second, but I still think we edged the second half, even though they had a few spells of pressure themselves.
You touched on it there, I think. The Rovers fans have been pointing out on your article on the site today that the stats back up that they were certainly in the game and they had more corners than us and things like that. I'm sure stats don't tell the whole picture. But we'll come to you, Patrick. Welcome to the podcast. Do you think 1-1 was fair, or do you agree with the others that were a bit robbed?
Well, of course, we were robbed in the end. It would have been absolutely fantastic to get that win. Because we did deserve it, I think. Although, as we've all pretty much mentioned so far, we weren't exactly on top at any point in the game. Where Kev said there that that was never a 20-minute spell where there was a lull, but by the same token, there was never a 20-minute spell where either team were massively on top. But we'd grafted to get the goal ourselves. And it's just unfortunate that, yet again, they've ended up with such a spawny goal to get themselves back in a game which they didn't deserve to. And that's twice in a row now.
It's the manner of the goal, isn't it? I mean, there's the back pass from Arfield, which is obviously very poor. But then after that, the clearance going on off roads, it's the sort of thing that happens one in 100 times, maybe. Kevin, just come back to you. Your article today on the site, for those who haven't read it, you were pointing out that it was the way that the result happened that was upsetting rather than the fact that it was 1-1.
It was, yeah. I mean, it's because it's not just the first time it's happened. It's again, but we've been so close to the win, and had it stole away from us in. It didn't feel like it was earned. I mean, I think I said in my thing with Sight that if they'd really earned the draw, you know, if they'd scored a wonder goal or they'd split a defence apart or just scored a header from one of their corners at the end, it'd be a little bit more, you know, easier to deal with. But oh, it's just you can see the goal, and it's because it's all our own doing. It's not that we've kind of brought it on by ourselves. We've essentially scored the goal for them, but it makes it so hard to deal with.
Well, you've made a good point there, because Tom Heaton was virtually untested throughout the whole game. There was the one shot in the first half that I think from Kearney that was a really good effort, but apart from that, he's had very little to do, and their goalkeeper has been quite busy all the way through. Andy, do you think maybe we didn't push hard enough for a second goal, maybe, or was there just not enough time left in the game, and it just made more sense to sit in and try and take the 1-0?
No, I think we should have gone for it. I think he was trying to be fair. I mean, Brian Clough once said it only takes a minute to score a goal. There were, how many were added on at the end? 5 minutes. I would have took Arfield off and put Keith on, definitely. Around the time when he put Junior on, I would have sort of, I thought he was pretty ineffective, and had they done that, he wouldn't have backpassed it, but, you know. He apologised on Twitter as well, didn't he, which I thought was pretty
yeah, that was
good
nice
of him.
Touch, actually. I mean, yeah. He didn't have to do that, so obviously he knows it's his fault, but it's good that he's accepted responsibility publicly and apologised to the fans as well. I think that was really important.
Yeah, I think we were trying to win.
Lessens the stick that he might have got otherwise.
Yeah, definitely. I think we were trying to win, though. I think Dash was, you know, he knew the importance of it, and I think, you know, if he thought that was the best thing to do, then so be it. You know, it nearly worked, didn't it? If Ings hadn't been brought down, potentially we could have won, so.
Well, exactly, you're right there. And that was, of course, a break from, was it a Rovers corner that we broke away from? You just touched on, excuse me, I've got a terrible voice today, my throat's killing, so excuse me if I'm a bit croaky. But you pointed there on Keith Tracy, who surprisingly dropped from the side. James, you were one who was a little bit, you weren't expecting to see Kightley start on his first game after he's come in on loan from Stoke.
Well, I thought if he was going to start Kightley, I thought he'd start Keith as well. And actually, it was good that the Arfield tweet was brought up, because before that I was all for Arfield never playing for Burnley again.
Me too.
You wouldn't have been on your own there.
I wasn't best pleased with him. I got a bit of stick on Twitter for saying it should be subbed instantly as well. But
I think I tweeted that it was a sackable offence, but yeah, I wasn't being entirely serious.
But I would have started Keith. I mean, I think Keith can feel very, very hard done by to have not started, and then to be looked over as the first sub. I don't know what he's done during the week, but it's on the back of his performances recently, that was definitely not deserved to sort of drop right down the pecking order.
I read something online today that Tracy had not been well during the week. I don't know any specifics, but maybe he just wasn't 100%, and Dash didn't want to play someone who wasn't going to be right at the top of the fitness. So, but Kightley, as an alternative to Tracy, hasn't played a game since April, so it was always going to be difficult to expect him to be at full speed. Patrick, what did you make of Kightley making his debut on Saturday? Patrick, are you there? Okay, we won't go to Patrick. He seems to have disappeared.
I mean, on Kightley, I mean, I think he, in open
sorry.
Play, he's there.
My phone decided to go to sleep, so in my panic I was pressing every button ever and made everything go away, so sorry about that.
That's broadcasting on the Northern Ireland podcast.
With regards to Tracy and Arfield, it was one of those where it felt a bit more old. It was like when he turned up to a game kind of 10 years ago and suddenly this player you'd signed was making his debut. It doesn't always happen, does it, now, because so many managers are kind of loathe to change a winning team, especially after we're so impressive at Derby. So he was definitely a surprise to see him start, and as you were discussing, in place of Tracy. He obviously needs a run of games, doesn't he? And as has already been mentioned beforehand, possibly could have made that change a little bit earlier. And possibly Gini was the right man to bring on rather than Tracy, because the way, well, Gini's goal obviously came from him being infield, which Tracy doesn't always do as much unless he's cutting in from the right hand side. But that had been changing shape as well. So I'd have gone for it sooner. I'd have gone for it a good 10 minutes sooner than we did with the changes. But, you know, there's fair play for the substitution. And I think once we got that goal, we needed to keep it solid. So by keeping our field on, he gives us that, doesn't he? He gives us that more of a good, solid wide midfielder rather than a winger. So
I think that's what Dash likes. I think that's why he's a fan of Arfield, because he offers the energy and he'll get back the pitch and he'll disrupt the play. So looking at it from that point of view, it was a good decision to leave him on. It's just that obviously it went a bit wrong with the back pass. And obviously on the point of the substitutions, we can only be so critical of what Dash did, because of course he put Stanislas on and he scored the goal. To come to you, Kevin, on that goal, do you think it was one of the best in recent years at Turf Moor? It's really well worked, and then a fantastic hit from Junior.
I bet you do, don't you?
Absolutely. I've only just stopped cheering after that one went in.
Yeah. To be honest, I have no idea what happened with the goal. It's just all a blur. I just remember seeing it score in about 4 miles out, shooting it, and then jumping around the room celebrating and knocking a drink over and being covered in whatever I was drinking and just jumping around the room. And yeah, I don't really know what happened. It was fantastic. It was definitely, even if he'd fallen over, if Sam Vaux had fallen over and scored it with his bum or something, like a nude body part, it'd still be the best goal to be scored at the Turf in however long. It was against Blackburn. It doesn't matter what type of goal it is. It's any goal against Blackburn at Turf is one of the best ever, isn't it?
It's a shame, really, that it didn't turn out to be a winner, Andy, because it was such a good goal as well. I mean, it would have been certainly a goal worthy of settling any game, wouldn't it?
I nearly had a heart attack when he scored, to be honest. It was kind of like when Blake scored against them in when we played at Ewood in the Premiership season.
Yeah.
I did try tweeting you, and for some reason my tweets wouldn't send, but I just had pictures of you like sort of rolling around on the floor like
it was really funny actually. I'll tell you what was going on. I went round to a friend's to watch it on the telly, and there was someone at the door, so we'd gone to talk to this guy at the door, and it turns out he was trying to sell some TV package or something. So he was talking to this guy at the door when Junior scored, and obviously I was screaming at the telly and jumping up and down. And then he brought the guy in because the guy was still trying to sell him that thing. So I'm like glued to the telly and swearing every time they foul one of our guys and stuff. And he must have thought it was a right loon. But yeah, the whole street, I think, must have been aware that something very good had happened when that goal went in.
The guy in front of me is a massive Junior Stanislas fan, and his little lad's about 8 years old, and he laughs at his dad for liking Stanislas. And when he came on, sort of said, "Well, he won't do anything." And then when he scores like a minute later, it was good. Who cares who scores? It was against Blackman.
No, well, listen, James was giving me a little bit of stick on Twitter because he thought I was gloating about the fact Junior had scored, but I was genuinely just happy that we'd done a goal against Rovers and it looked like we were going to win the game.
But well, Ings would have scored, but he got stopped, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, Ings set Junior.
That volley he did a good volley. Was it Arfield that had a shot blocked, saved? And then Ings sort of kept his body over the top of it and hit it. A really hard shot that he did. The double save.
Double save, yeah, from Keane. Yeah. That was probably the best save of the game.
Yeah.
Just to come back to you, Patrick, on that goal then from Junior. Is that the sort of thing you want to see more from him? People criticise him for his consistency?
Well, people do, and people do criticise him, and they have got a point. But Junior is the kind of one player in the team who can just produce the telling cross, the shot on target, which either goes in or gets parried back out. I mean, when you just imagine a Junior Stanislas goal, he's usually infield, he's usually kind of 25 yards out, hits the top corner half the time. But, you know, some of the times he needs 10 yards pretty much to hit it, which he created for himself by his, you know, on Saturday. I mean, his first touch, and then the ball into Ings, and then, well, if you hit a shot that sweetly with your wrong foot, then it deserves to go in as well.
It's sort of a once-in-a-lifetime thing, I suppose. They'll probably never hit the ball that cleanly again. We'll go through some of the comments on the chat that I've been neglecting slightly. Gemma's been on. She says, we were robbed, and the fact that Rovers were celebrating a draw against us like it's a win says it all. I think that's a very good point. The fans now saying, oh, it's still 34 years and you're never going to beat us, but it's arguably three times in a row they've been lucky to get away with a draw, so it's certainly interesting how the tables are turning there. And a comment from Ganks as well, he says, it'd be hilarious if he said he wasn't impressed with what Gary Boyer, the Blackburn manager, is trying to do with the squad regarding bringing in good young players and promoting the academy lads, but saying that they are still bastards, which I think is an excellent point. And Ganks has been on asking if we can move to Tuesday, as he's a big fan of Gary Neville. Unfortunately, we do like going up against Gary Neville, so we're not going to be doing that. We'll come to the quiz now, actually, which is a special Rovers question. It's quite a tricky question, so hopefully it's going to go down well. If you are listening on the chat, please come in with your guesses. And if you're listening and you're on Twitter, you can put your guesses on and I'll get the question on. Use the hashtag NNNpod and we'll get your answers read out as well. So the quiz question this week is, there's 25 players since the Second World War have played for both Burnley and Rovers. So, who are they? And we'll start with you, Andy. Can you name any players who have played for both Burnley and Rovers?
I'm going to name the Second World War. Yeah, I'm going to name a very good friend of mine who sadly passed away beginning of this year, actually, John Kennelly, who actually still hated Blackman.
Fair play to him. I'm glad you mentioned him because, like you say, you're a personal friend of his and you wrote a very nice tribute to him on the site as well. So, I'm glad you pointed that out. James Bird, a player who has played for both Burnley and Rovers?
I don't even have a guess.
Come on, James, your favourite.
There's two in the squad at the moment, come on.
Oh, Keith Tracy, yeah, I'll go for Keith Tracy,
exactly. I can't believe you didn't get straight away. Sorry. That's terrible, terrible. Kevin, we'll have one from you.
Well, I'm trying to think of his name. He's a defender. He's a centre-back. We had him on loan from Blackburn, but I've no idea what he's called, so I'm going to have to go with David Jones instead.
David Jones is, of course, the other that's current. I can tell you, there's a couple that I think were on loan from Rovers that I can spot.
I've got another one.
Three.
Was Lenny John Rose a Rover?
Absolutely, Lenny John Rose, who had 17 spells at Turf Moor.
I love it when Lenny John Rose is a quiz answer.
I think we should only ask questions that Lenny John Rose is the answer to, because it just reminds everyone of Lenny John Rose. And that
definitely.
We'll have a guess from you then, Patrick, and then we'll do some of the ones that have already come in.
Excellent. Well, I'd have gone for Lenny John Rose simply because parents' cat is named Lenny, after me and my dad sabotaged a vote for a new cat's name. So I think of Lenny John Rose every day when I'm with my parents. But otherwise, I don't know if this is who Kev was thinking about anyway, but Andy Todd. I mean, he came in and really solidified a shambolic turn and defence.
That's for one.
So, yeah. So he's just one of those players who just knew how to defend. He was a rough bloke, but he just knew how to defend.
It was exactly what we needed at that time, weren't we, Andy Todd? And we've had Andy Todd from Leeds Claret as well, so congratulations to you for getting that one right. And a couple more guesses that have come in already. Matthew says Andy Cole, who of course played for Burnley at the end of his career. Andy, don't call me Andy Cole, scored a hat-trick at QPR for us. Bradley Orr is a very good guess. The right back, who I think came on loan from Newcastle, is that right? And then there's a couple more. Jay Machiavelli, Robbie Kopak was the other defender who's been on loan. And I think we're up to speed.
I'm on a bus now, by the way, and I'm under the speaker, so if we get another guest, this is for the London bus announcer woman. But was did David May play for Blackburn?
David May did play for Blackburn, of course, a Premier League medal winner at Manchester United. What? And someone on the chat has said David May, so well done there. There's still quite a lot to go. A couple of more recent ones and a few older ones. Andy, you said you've got a couple of guesses for us?
Yeah, I've got Gordon Cowans was one.
Gordon Cowans is a good one.
And there's a current vintage claret place for the vintage clarets at the moment. David Hamilton, he played for them as well.
David Hamilton is a very good one as well. So we're about halfway there. Keep your guesses coming on the chat. And if you are listening through Twitter, use the NNN pod hashtag while I talk. I'm just going to check that no one's had any guesses there. Like I say, we're without Adam today because he's at university now. So
lad.
He'll be out on the lash. He said he has to go and be social. So no Adam this week. Yeah, there's no more guesses. So we'll go through the panel one more time. James, have you got any more?
No, I did think of David May, but obviously Kev went and got that one.
Okay, I'll give you a clue. There was someone who was at the club last year on loan. Anyone know the guy who was on loan last season? He wasn't very good.
That doesn't really narrow it down, does it?
Yes. Go on. The winger. Yeah. It was rubbish from Hull. Yeah. He's got a name.
Yeah, he does have
a name. Oh, Cameron Stewart. He was terrible.
Cameron Stewart, that's the one. I'm not surprised that's the one. People don't remember him because he's not very memorable, is he? And Ganks has got that one right on the chat as well. Any more from you, Patrick?
Well, it was mentioned at half-time, Chris Pearce started there, but I don't know, did he actually play for him? I know you. Yeah.
He's not on the list I've got.
Right. Well, as I say, it was announced that he started there.
He did play at Blackburn, I think.
I'll check that one, but it's not on the list I've got. Hopefully the quiz answers will be more accurate than last week when a little bit problematic. But I can tell you we've still got 7, 8, 12, 13 and the 25 to get. I'm just checking Chris Pearce now. Any more from you, Andy?
No, I'm racking my brains. Everyone's said the ones that...
Well, according to Wikipedia, this is broadcasting of the finest calibre. I'm on Wikipedia checking stuff out. Chris Pearce made no appearances for Blackburn Rovers. But
quite right, too.
At the club. So, incorrect, according to Wikipedia.
But that's fine by me, because, you know, first season was 91-92, and for me, he was a bit of a hero, despite hardly ever playing.
Well, Chris Pearce not right. I'll give you a clue for another one. Another player who came, I think, on loan initially. A smallish midfield player, technically quite good.
Alan Mann.
That's the one. Alan Mann, I think he was at the club when Steve Cottrell was at charge. I think the rest are all older players, shall we say. So you need to get racking your brains for those. And we'll come back to the quiz a little bit later because I think we're all drying up a little bit. So we will come back to that. And we'll go back to talking about the Rovers game. A point I wanted to make was about the crowd, actually. The crowd for the game was announced at less than 16,000 people. And about 3,000 of those was from Rovers, which is quite low for a derby. Andy, was the atmosphere still good despite the crowd, and why do you think the crowd was so low?
Yeah, I thought the atmosphere was pretty good. Where I sit, there did seem to be quite a lot of empty seats. Blackburn, I heard, sold about, they were about 500 short of their allocation, but they could have had more. So, I mean, they only sold about 2/3 of that stand, which, so they're, you know, they're, attendance was low. It's got to be, television, hasn't it? Plus, you know, from the Blackburn point of view, I know quite a few Blackburn fans, and they don't, you know, they're similar to us, that they don't like this ring of steel sort of taking away your civil liberties approach from the police.
Well, absolutely. I think that's a very good point. It'll be interesting to see whether the police continue with the way that they do the game, with the crowds being a bit lower, and I don't think there was any trouble. So that will be interesting. Patrick, what do you make of the policing? Do you think they've got it about right, or is it too much, or is it putting people off?
It's too much. I mean, there were what, 9 arrests where people get arrested for being idiots. If you go on a game at the turf, you're going to get arrested if you're an idiot. But the police will point to that it was such a low figure because of their preventative measures. I think, you know, the steel wall does look like a huge overreaction. I don't know. I think credit to a lot of just normal Burnley fans that people just get on with it, you know, around the ground. And I think the vast majority of people can just walk by. But as I think, no, basically no one should be herded around like that in order to go to a football game, whether they support Blackburn Rovers or not.
Well, there was certainly some away fans who were put off coming from the game. There was a woman did the Q&A for us, Catherine Oddy, who said she was going to come to the game, but she didn't want to bring her children because of the way the police behave. So there's certainly people being put off by that. And maybe the ticket prices as well. It was like over 30 quid for a game that was on telly. Is it a bit too much, Andy? Do you think that's put people off as well?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, that's quite a big separate debate in it, the ticketing.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about the ticket price every week, I think.
I think that the one thing I would say about the way the police are policing it, if you will, all the idiots are still getting to go on the games because they never get a chance to do anything wrong to get arrested. I'd have a game where you let them sort of scrap amongst one another. They can bang them all up then, and then they won't be there at the next one. Problem solved.
A sort of dedicated fight match.
Yeah, yeah. Get rid of all the idiots completely then.
That's an interesting theory. We've got Kevin back, who was on a bus last we heard, so I'm not sure if he's completely safe. Kevin, we were talking about the ticketing and the policing of the match and why the crowd was so low. Have you got a view on why there was less than 16,000 at Turf Moor?
I think it's the same reason. There's just approaching 10,000, around the 10,000 mark for a non-Blackburn game. It's it's not the most appealing summer this summer. A lot of people were turned off. I think the season ticket sales were probably quite low. In addition to the high ticket prices, and again, people just don't want to be asked about the police, especially when it's on TV for free. So it's really disappointing, but it's so low. But I think you can definitely point to several reasons why that might be the case.
Well, we've had a couple of reasons cited on the chat as well. Robbie's pointed out that you can only get one ticket per Claret's number. Maybe that was a bit unnecessary. There's been a few stories of people who were trying to buy more than one and it was too difficult, so they decided not to bother. There's obviously the ticket prices, the way the game's being policed, the fact that it was on television at the same point. So there was a lot to deal with, but maybe the club did get a little bit wrong and tickets should have been easier to buy maybe, or cost a bit less money. James, have you got anything to add on the crowd on Saturday?
Well, Andy said he thought the atmosphere was quite good. I actually thought it was pretty poor for the game it was. I would certainly expect more singing than there was, and you know, a lot more noise. And I know people always point towards the cricket field stand being given to away fans and that being better for atmosphere, but I think that's rubbish. If you had three ends all singing, they'd drown out one stand just because it's got slightly better acoustics.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if anything changes for next year if we've got the derby again. Obviously, hopefully we'll get promoted and they'll get relegated, so hopefully we won't be playing them again, but we need a chance to beat them, I suppose, as well. But it will be interesting to see if the club has a response to the low crowd. I think there were only a few arrests this time, so the police might claim that they've got it right, but it's a bit of a vicious circle, isn't it? It's like, which one comes first? So it'll be interesting to see what they do next. We'll come back to that Williamson red card that Andy raised earlier. One of the things that I was talking to some people on Twitter about after the game was the fact that the punishment didn't really seem enough for what he did. I mean, it's in injury time, Ings is effectively through on goal, he's probably going to score, and it's just a red card and we get a free kick on the halfway line. Andy, do you think that's fair, or do the rules need to be changed so that there's more of a deterrent for players to do that?
I think it was cynical. I mean, it was a professional foul of, you know, a textbook professional foul. I really do think that Ings, well, he was getting away from him. I really do think that he'd score definitely, well, 9 times out of 10. The way we were playing, I think he would have bagged. We win. You know, to get a free kick just inside their half where you clean through on goal, it's ridiculous. But, I mean, you couldn't give a penalty, although I think it deserved a penalty. But, I mean, when you're 30 yards out of the penalty box, how can you... I don't know. It's a bit tricky. You know,
it is tricky.
I don't know.
I mean, there would certainly have to be a rule change. One of the things I think I suggested to you, James, was the possibility of something like a penalty goal. You watch a lot of ice hockey, don't you? They have something similar, do they?
Yeah, if you're through clean one-on-one with the goaltender and you get tripped, you get a penalty shot. There's no such thing as, obviously, a penalty kick in hockey. So a penalty shot is the de facto penalty method. But if normally if you trip someone, you just get sent to the sin bin for 2 minutes. Whereas if it's a clear opportunity to score, that's changed to a penalty shot. They get an opportunity to skate from the halfway mark and take a shot on the goaltender.
Do you think it's feasible that something similar to that could be introduced in football? Or are we just being a little bit bitter about the fact that it was also got on the end of one?
I think that's feasible. I don't see a reason why you couldn't put it in. Obviously, there'll be people who oppose it because it's a majorly drastic change to what we're used to. But I don't think anyone who's been on the receiving end of a situation like that can argue that a free kick and a red card just isn't fair, because you've gone from having one man through against the goalkeeper to suddenly they can get all 11 back behind the ball and you've got to sort of loft it into the box. I mean, it's not fair that way, is it?
It's a no-brainer, isn't it? For Williamson, he's just come on. Ings is quicker than him. He's getting away. He's certainly going to have a shot on target. Well, a shot on goal. So he's obviously going to bring him down at that stage of the game. Patrick, what do you make of that situation? And do you think there needs to be a rule change?
Well, I think anything such as that would be unnatural to shift the position of the ball so greatly would be completely unnatural. And the thing with football is that they try and keep it as flowing and as natural as possible anyway. I mean, there's been all the resistance to even a 10-second pause to decide whether it's a goal, which even then was deemed too long. I would be uncomfortable with just such a huge difference to the natural makeup of the game that's happened it's been played like this for over 100 years.
I suppose there is precedent with things like the offside rule that was brought in, but this would be a totally different thing. If we say the penalty goal type example, for example, they could have said Ings runs with the ball from the halfway line and the goalkeeper can come back out. So it would be interesting. Let us know your views on that if you're on the chat, because it's an interesting thought. We do need to point out that if it was the other way around and it was Jordan Rhodes through on goal and Michael Duff had brought him down, then we'd probably be saying Duff's done the right thing. So we do need to point that out, and it maybe is slightly bitter on our point, but I do think it is unfair that Williamson just takes his red card and that's his punishment, and we basically just get a free kick and the last 3 minutes against 10 men. So it is an interesting argument. Just one last point on that game then, on the Blackburn game from Saturday. Do you think, Andy, that maybe the 34 years thing is becoming too much pressure for the players?
It's getting too much pressure for me. So I went to school there in the 80s and got, you know, you get quite a bit of abuse coming from Burnley, going to school in Blackburn, and to still not beat them when I'm 38 years of age is just so annoying. It's unbelievable. We're getting closer and closer, but it's not just close enough. And I really do think it's about time we give them a pasting, and let's hope we do it. Do you know what I'd actually like is we don't win at Ewood, but then we beat them in the playoff final, and we go up.
Can you imagine the police?
I would literally drop dead as the final whistle went, I think, and die a happy man.
That would be an incredible
game. Andy.
But could you imagine if we lost that game?
80,000 people or bus to Wembley.
I know, that would be horrible, but also incredible.
Fences round Wembley to keep it as two halves.
And we'd have to set off 6 days before.
Yeah, probably. Everyone would have to take a month off work. God. Don't even want to think about what that would be.
You like. Joke about it, but...
Well, it would be interesting to see what they'd do. I mean, if insisting on busing people to the other ground, and would they try and enforce that? Can you try and enforce that? It'd be impossible, wouldn't it? But I'm sure they'd come up with some bizarre way to try and keep the fans apart, thinking that there'd be a massive riot.
To be fair, I think that would dilute the amount of idiots you get there. With so many being there, I think you'd almost become safer.
Yeah, it would be weird. I mean, even on a normal game, the vast majority of people just want to go and watch a football match, don't they?
Yeah, and I think that increases, you increase the number as well, because obviously you get more casuals in.
I think at Wembley as well, it'd probably be harder to get for the troublemakers to get tickets together, so that would probably have an impact as well. But, yeah, that's something to think about, what that would be
like. Obviously, when I say casuals, I mean casual fans, not people who like to think that they wear Adidas trainers and kick 9 months out of
here. Suicide lot. Is that still a thing? Is the Suicide Squad still a thing?
I hope not.
Well, we'll go back to the quiz now, then. We've had a few answers have come in, so get your thinking caps on, you three, because there'll still be a few more to go. The quiz question, if you're just tuning in now, is there's 25 players have played for both Burnley and Blackburn Rovers since the Second World War. Who are they? And we've got about half of them so far, but there's some more guesses coming in through Twitter. We'll start off with Matt Crossley was on, but he only guessed some of the players we've already had. David Jessup said David Jones and Keith Newton. So we'll cross off Keith Newton. That was a very good guess. There was also some guesses from Richard Laycock, who got four of the more recent ones that have already gone as well. Ian Creamer said Kevin Hurd. Name that rings bell for anyone, Kevin Hurd? Can't see it's one, I reckon.
Yeah, that was my guess for Kevin Hurd.
Oh, did you say Kevin Hurd? Sorry.
I was about to do. His wife taught me at junior school.
Really?
Yeah.
Claim to fame.
I see. He lives in Barnoldswick still, I think. He's still in football, I believe.
Oh, really? There's a couple more guys in the team as well.
Andy, is there any former player that Andy doesn't have a connection to?
I'm like the Kevin Bacon. I'm like just.
We should do that as a quiz one week. We'll do like 60 degrees of separation. Andy Devaney in all Burnley players in history. I'll try and get that set up. We've had a couple more guesses through Twitter as well. Marshall Burke is the correct answer, so I'll cross him off. David Hamilton and Lenny John Rose had already gone, so I think we're down to the last 9 or 10 or so now. Someone said Michael Duff if it counts as his own goal, which obviously it doesn't. Jay Machiavelli's gone, Andy Cole's gone, David Neil, Lenny John Rose, they've all gone as well. Keep your guesses coming in and we'll go through the panel again. Andy, have you got any more?
No, I had Junior Bent in my head, but I don't think he did. I think I'm mixing him up with Marshall Burke.
No, it's not on the list, Junior Bent. There's one that someone else has said that isn't on my list, but I think it might be right. Marlon Brooms. Was he an ex-Rovers player as well?
He was, but did he ever actually play for us other than kind of pre-seasons and then popping up on the pre-season photo? I don't think he actually played a league game, did he?
Nope, you're right enough. It's, according to Wikipedia, again, Marlon Brooms did not play for us, so it's Kieran on Twitter with that guess. That's an incorrect answer, I'm afraid. He never actually played for us. And Robbie's got one of the most famous Burnley players remaining, Adam Blacklaw. Burnley and Rovers he's played for. There's one more goalkeeper, actually. Fairly well-known. Relatively recent.
Andy Marriott didn't play for them, did he?
That's the one I was giving the clues for, Andy Marriott. And we're now down...
As my mum's sweetheart, she's obsessed with being mentioned, Alan Mann.
Yeah, Alan Mann went, I think, while you were on a bus-related absence.
Oh, I know him. I don't really.
Right, we're down to the last 8, and these might be tricky to get because I don't recognise any of the names, so I'm going to have to do some clues. If you're listening on the chat, keep your guesses coming in and we'll do clues for the first one, who I can tell you played for Burnley in the 1950s. and he moved directly from Burnley to Blackburn. And he also played for Southport and Chester.
Wouldn't have gone directly. M65 wouldn't have been built then. Well, that's gone through Aki.
Has anyone got any more? Or am I going to have to read out the answers?
I think if Andy can't get it, then no one's going to get it.
It is a tricky one. This. I was trying to come up with a question at about 6 o'clock this evening.
George Bray. He played in for Burnley 50s, I can't.
No, I'm afraid he's not one of them. Although Matt Crossley on Twitter has just got the one that I was giving you clues. So Jim Appleby was the one I was trying to get you to get. So I'll cross him off. And we are down to the last 6 now. There's one. This isn't going to be helpful for any of you, but shares a name with someone who taught me at university, which, like I say, is no use to anyone. But he played for Burnley between 1963 and 1965. Also played for Stockport. And we'll have to go through the answers because we're not going to get anywhere. It's going to take all day. So the other 6 players that have played for both Burnley and Rovers since the Second World War were Paul Comstiv, John Price, Eric Binns, Roy Stevenson, Peter Devine and Walter Joyce. Do you know any of them, Andy? Any more personal friends?
No, I remember watching Paul Comstiv and Warren Joyce's dad, isn't he?
Is it? Yep. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I've heard of Peter Devine, I think, played around late, about 87-ish or something, I think. 88?
I remember as a kid having an Own Girls and Gaffs video, and Peter Devine takes the worst penalty ever seen.
Is it worse than Gifton or Williams?
Gifton or Williams actually kicked it, whereas Peter Devine kind of stumbles over it like a drunken old man. And I hope it's on YouTube. It must be. But it's terrible. Peter Devine penalty comes up in Google, so it must be there. It is indeed.
Everyone listening to the podcast has now gone to YouTube to try and watch this penalty, and I'm going to do the same. We'll move on now to tomorrow night's game at Turf Moor. It's a quick turnaround, of course, from the derby. And it's Birmingham City at Turf Moor. I'm just watching that penalty and it is absolutely hilarious. I'll put the link on the site as soon as we finish. I'm distracted by how bad that penalty was. But yeah, Birmingham tomorrow night. Andy, do you think it's good that the game's coming so quickly after the disappointment of Saturday?
Sorry, I'm just laughing at that. That is pretty funny.
Can we get back on track, please?
Here we go again.
Penalty's funny.
Hey.
It doesn't get nearer to it every time you watch it, do you?
That is rubbish. What was the question again?
Moving on to the Birmingham game tomorrow night. Is it good that we've got another game so soon after the disappointment on Saturday?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the home form hasn't been great. Well, it doesn't seem to have been. I mean, probably has, hasn't it? But we just don't seem to kill people off at home. So, is that for the penalty?
I don't know who that was. That's not me.
That was me.
So yeah, I mean, if we go back to winning ways tomorrow, we've had 4 points in two games. So, you know, you'd probably take that.
Yeah, of course. Elliot will be back at Turf Moor. That's always a good occasion. James, do you think it's a good opportunity for 3 points? Birmingham have started the season quite badly, haven't they?
Yeah, I saw Harry Redknapp said to Steve Clark that he thought Birmingham were the best team they've played against so far. That just probably says more about the other teams they've played than Birmingham, because they look dire.
And they've got 4 points from 6 games and they've only beaten Yeovil so far.
And to be honest, from what I heard, they were lucky against Yeovil. Or more, Yeovil were unlucky. So, if we don't beat them, I don't even know what to say, because we've been fantastic so far. So, I can't comprehend us not beating them.
Well, the home form has been pretty good for a while now, so I think it's unbeaten in 7 or something. Or our stats, man, does that sound about right?
It must be about right. I can't remember the last time I saw us get beat at home.
So it's a big game, really, I suppose, when you look ahead to Saturday, a tricky trip to Leeds on the cards. So That'll be an interesting one to see if we can get 3 points on the board. Patrick, do you think, coming on the back of Saturday's result, that it's a good thing that we're playing again so soon, just 3 days between those matches?
I do, yeah, and it being at home again is a bonus as well. It means that, I mean, it would have been perhaps too much if we'd have beaten Blackburn, but then been so up still from the game on Saturday, but we went into Tuesday and weren't quite on it. I think it gives us a bit more focus that we can actually get a win, get 4 points out, whereas otherwise we could have had 3 points and a great Saturday night, or and then followed it up with a drab Tuesday, where in fact it was a bit of a after the Lord Mayor show kind of thing.
I think that's an interesting point. Do you agree with that, Kevin? That with the long term picture, it might turn out that drawing on Saturday was a good result.
I'm not sure. I think what you like about Sean Dyche, but he gets his team organised and he gets them prepared. I think he'll spend a lot of time with the team before the match, making them completely forget about Blackburn, regardless of what result had been. He'd have been as soon as the match is over, that'll be the end of it, I think, with Sean Dyche. Whatever you say about anything else about him, he's definitely ultra prepared. So I don't think it'd have a huge difference, but I do agree with Passion to the extent that we're probably better, just in terms of naturally, we are probably better prepared going into this match on the back of a draw. But I don't think anybody would be happy going to the draw. Obviously, we'd much rather going on the win.
It's looking for a silver lining, isn't it, on the cloud?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think we would swap it, but it's probably an advantage, shall we say, for getting that draw. Do you think we changes to the team, Andy, or will it be maybe the same again? Kightley maybe drop out?
Oh, sorry, wrong button. I think it'd be interesting to see if Arfield starts, I think.
Yeah, that's a possibility as well, I think.
And I would have had longing for Duff as well. I'm pretty sure he played Duff because of experience, but I was frightened to death of him giving a penalty away and a red card.
I think Duff's first choice. Obviously, he came back into the game against Preston with Ben Me, and I didn't expect either of them to start the next league game, but they did. So, I mean, I think that shows where his preference is.
Yeah, that's obviously his first choice, isn't it? So I think Duff over long will be for the foreseeable future, and Long will probably just have to wait until there's a chance to come back in through injury or suspension or something. Patrick, do you think we'll make changes tomorrow night?
I'd keep the defence as it is because, Birmingham have got Lee Novak up front nowadays, who is nothing other than a big bloke, is he really? He was in the same Huddersfield squad as Alan Lee, and they're both very, very similar players. So I'd keep it at the back, I'd keep it the same. I think Me had a decent enough game on Saturday, was solid enough, gave us a good base, but because we've got a good base there, I think we can have a bit more ambition going forward. Whether that is, I mean, if Tracy didn't figure one bit on Saturday, is he out of the picture now? Otherwise, is it a case of, what has Junior done in there?
That's the plant outside the door. Sorry, the beep was me clocking out. And the rest is some of the ventilation kit.
Oh dear. This has been a little bit of a shambles today, so I apologise for that. But we will soldier on. Kevin, we'll come to you on the team.
Sorry.
I don't know what to say. Someone compared me to Jeff Stelling a couple of weeks ago, like half joking, and I'm pretty sure Jeff Stelling never has to put up with this. No one's ever driving lorries past Jeff Stelling while he's.
Sorry, I had to run back past because actually I went to the canteen door to see what pie's on tomorrow. That's why I went past the machinery.
You can see the lad out of the building.
Oh my god. I can't remember where we were. We were talking about Birmingham tomorrow night.
What is in the canteen tomorrow?
Tell us about the pies.
Steak. Was it worth it?
The pies here at work are fantastic. The cutlery and crockery leave something to be desired in terms of cleanliness, but the pies they put on it, it's fantastic. Can't argue with it. They got a bit. They were a bit exotic last week on Thursday, where we had paella.
Oh.
Today we had Chinese. So.
Did someone get my? Did someone thought I was a pie?
Just tuning in. This is James Bird's Pie Podcast. And talk about football all the time. We might as well stay with the pies, I think.
Can you order them with your iPhone, though?
No, not quite.
Maybe put that to him.
I think they're a bit cheaper at work, though, and they come with chips than they are at the turf. So
my mate ordered a £3 pie the other night on the turf, and he was disappointed when it was so small. He expected quite a big pie for three, you know, £3 quite heavy.
Tell you what what they don't give you in size, they give you in temperature.
Yeah, you're not paying for the pie, you're just paying for someone to keep you warm for a few minutes.
It's hotter than Alan Partridge's apple pie, isn't it?
I do like as well how Burnley have marketed it as the iPie, which in a broad Burnley accent will be an R-par, which is just brilliant.
I can't really see people using that one. I think we've got distracted somewhat from the matter of hand, which is football. If there's anyone still listening, we will do a bit more talk about football before we wrap it up. Kevin, tomorrow night then, Birmingham. Would you change the team at all?
I'd be very surprised if Kightley plays, having with the little football he's played over the last few months. But other than that, I can't see any changes, really. I know I was a big supporter of keeping Kevin Long in the side after his mistake earlier in the season, but I do think that keeping consistency with your back four is very important, especially when we're doing well with our back four. We're not just conceding many goals. So I won't keep making changes there. And just for Scott Arfield, keep him in as well. I don't think you want to make too many changes after a good form. So I'd bring, depending on how Daz is feeling, either Junior or Keith in for Kylie, but that's about it.
You think maybe Stanislas has earned a start after he's got on Saturday, Andy?
I'd put him in for Kightley. Yeah, definitely. I mean, he does seem to be. I said he was a secret weapon on Saturday, and he turned out to be. You know, but I do. He's either good or bad. Stanislas. He's a bit sort of. He never seems to have a middle grade. He either does something amazing or he seems to do nothing. But let's hope he keeps doing the amazing bits.
I think he managed to do both on Saturday.
Well, yeah.
Apart from when he scored, he did pretty much nothing. It was just outstanding. Out of doing nothing for a couple of minutes, he suddenly scored, then just went back to.
But you'd take that, wouldn't you? You'd take that.
Well, maybe if he did it a second time, and we could have won 2-1.
I think it's a little bit harsh to criticise Stanislas when he did score that goal, and he was only on. I think it was 7 minutes or something after the goal when he scored.
Oh, it was a great goal. I was shocked. For many reasons, but one of them being that he suddenly popped up with that goal in a derby. Because I didn't have him down as a derby-type player.
It'll be interesting to see if opinion sways on Stanislas after that goal, because I think he has surprised a few people. Maybe someone like Tracy you'd expect to do that, especially with it being his old club and he's been playing quite well. So it's maybe unexpected that Tracy was totally uninvolved, but Stanislas repaired the manager's faith with the goal, didn't he?
I mean, it's interesting you said that, because I think when Sam Vokes scored the equaliser against Blackman at the Turf, I mean, that was a big turning point for people's opinion on him.
I thought so, but there's still a lot of people who don't seem to think much of Sam Vokes.
I don't particularly, but I really hated him before he scored against Blackman.
I don't know how you can say that. On Saturday, he ran after everything. I mean, if there's one thing you can say about Sam Vokes, is that what he lacks in pace, he makes up for in effort. Because one day someone's going to slip and he's going to be there.
Yeah, I think we put every time we put in these ball in the boxes, though, he never seems to sort of be where he should be. To me, that you know, but I don't fault it. I don't fault his effort.
In his defence, maybe the ball's just not going where.
Fair point.
The cross has to be in the right place, and the striker has to be in the right place.
He ain't no wings.
On some books, yeah. On some books, I think I just said I don't think it's a coincidence that he scores with pretty much every play, every piece of his body. I think he does get into the right place. He just doesn't move. He just stands there. In the right spot. He knows the ball's going to come to eventually. He knows it'll hit him at some point. So he just stands there and he'll hit him and go in.
We saw on Saturday and nearly scored with his neck. And it reminded me a lot of when Andy Gray scored charging the goalkeeper down. But you know, if you chase after those lost courses, one day it's going to become a cause and he's going to score from it.
It would have been interesting, wouldn't it? If the first 5 minutes or so, was it that chance when Keane came out and smashed it against Volks and it was only a few yards wide. So that would have been four goals for the season, three of them total accidents.
I wonder...
You're right, if he's not there, he doesn't get the chances. So you've got to at least credit him for being in the right place.
I wonder when he used to learn to play football when he was little, if he'd learnt by the head, shoulders, knees and toes rhyme, perhaps.
That's an interesting point. Patrick, what do you make of Sam Volk so far?
I thought he had one of his best games I've seen him on Saturday. And a lot of it was, I mean, yeah, he's not as aggressive and good in the air as we've seen other strikers be, and I include Charlie Austin in that. But one thing that I noticed on Saturday was a lot of balls, a lot of uncomfortable balls in near his midriff. He managed to get down and off. He even pulled out a fancy flick on Saturday, which is completely unvoked like. I was impressed. I was impressed by his all-round work. And it would be nice if he was getting into those near post positions, you know. But think of who we've had the last couple of seasons as benchmarks. Charlie Austin and Jerry Rodriguez, they're pretty damn good. I don't think it's the end of the world, but he's not quite that man yet.
Well, we raise this every week, I think, but on the point of signings, is it still striker that we think we want to bring in? Folks, things have been scoring an average of about a goal a game, that partnership, but there's only Ryan Noble in reserve. Is it still forward you'd like to see us bring in?
I think Saturday's reinforced that. I mean, Ryan Noble's not even on the bench on Saturday. I think a striker's what we need. I'm not sure what type of striker we need. I mean, it's interesting that Patrick brought up who Volks has got to compete with in recent history. But arguably, before those two, there was probably the best striker I've ever seen at Burnley, and that's Stephen Fletcher. And following on from those three is going to be a tough act for anyone, really.
Well, there's Fletcher, there's Rodriguez. We've had some very good strikers. We've been treated, really. Players like Andy Gray as well were excellent for the club, so it's tough. But I think Volks, he's getting there. Would you still like to see a striker come in, Andy?
Yeah, I think perhaps we should have somebody who's sort of on the way back down, if you will, not like Ian Wright, because I think we'd never be able to do that sort of business again, but somebody who's coming down from played in the Premier League and on the way back, which would kind of give a balance with the, you know, Ings and Volks, who are both young and sort of on the way up through the careers.
Another Andy Cole type player would probably be good.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that.
Yeah, someone with a bit of experience to pass on.
Kevin Phillips, them sort of players, you know, there must be some of them knocking about.
Yeah, Matt's been on the comment, it suggested Mason on loan from Cardiff. I think that's someone who's been mentioned because Marky Mackay is good friends with Sean Dash. I don't think he was in there.
He's been picked in their 25. So
he wasn't in the squad, was he?
So I think the Premier League kills that off.
That's interesting. Kevin, have you got a point to make about possible signings?
Yeah, I think what Andy was saying is probably our most likely way forward. In terms of preference, I don't know if how finances will allow for certain deals, but I think somebody like in the Kevin Phillips mould, somebody like that is probably going to be a little bit more happier to come and play a little bit more of a bit part role if he's really, you know, really getting on, maybe can't play every week. Whereas I think with Ings and Volks doing so well,
I think we will struggle to convince Premier League team to let their best players, their best, you know, their most promising youngsters come out on loan to us if we can't guarantee them first team football. Because essentially, what's coming to us to play a bit of part game, come off the bench every two games for half an hour. We'd be better off playing every week in you know, United, Liverpool reserves. So I think Dyche has probably got a hard sell trying to get a striker on loan. Maybe why it's taking so long.
He'll have his ear to the ground and he'll be seeing who's available and what deals are all to be done. But we're getting into that stage of the season now, Patrick, where it's going to be two games a week a lot of the time, so it can be hard to get these deals done just because there's a lot of football to be played.
Yeah, I mean, with what you're saying, getting playing twice a week, basically a two-man forward line, both playing with a kid with not much of a career behind him, it isn't enough, unfortunately. And it's quite clear that Dyche likes playing this 4-4-2, and we look good with it. We do look solid, and we're scoring goals. So I think we should keep the shape, but we definitely need a body in. With regards to players to come in, I don't know if we need someone else to just give us that bit more of a physical option, kind of off the ball. So it's a ball into a channel. You know he's going to get there. You know he's going to win it. You know he's going to kind of hold it up, which, especially away from home and with two games a week, that can be really vital. But I don't see either of the front two or Noble being that kind of man. So, yeah, we should allow Dyche to bring someone in now.
On that, I think I'd really fancy a pacier guy. You know, you could just sort of bring on late and he can run people ragged with like the energy he's got compared to people who've been on all game.
There's still a lack of pace in the squad, I think. We don't really have players who are going to get in behind and stretch teams with their pace. Like Patterson did that a bit, but it wasn't as quick as he used to be. We haven't really replaced him in that sort of sense. So,
It'd be great to have like a new Dimi Papadopoulos style player.
Yeah, someone with that sort of really explosive pace.
Maybe he can speak English and stay stood up for 10 minutes. But
yeah, and actually not going away to play for Greece every other week.
I never thought I'd hear the words "we need another Dimi Papadopoulos."
I remember seeing Dimi Papadopoulos, actually. One of the only good memories I've got of him. It was a League Cup game, I think, at Huddersfield. And he came on... I think he came on late and he scored the winner in extra time. And I think it was Golden Goal. It was when we used to play Golden Goal. And we were all just really happy that we were going to be able to go home because it was a horrible day and a horrible game. Just a quick point on Leeds as well at the weekend. Obviously, quite a big game for Burnley. Burnley-Leeds. Expensive tickets again. Patrick, is that going to be one that you're going to be at? You're based in Leeds, aren't you?
Well, I'm going to try my best to get a freebie. Obviously, being based over here in Leeds, I do know quite a few people who do end up getting freebies themselves. But, I mean, for me, it is one of those games that we need to win because I'm going to be turning up to my Sunday league dressing room at kind of 9:30, 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. And we can't have lost. We really can't have lost because it's not going to be a pleasant place. Neither is work the week after. So we need a win. It's not a place where we've had, we haven't had much joy against Leeds recently. They've kind of become as jammy as Blackburn have in last minute winners. We've had those quite a few times. We just need to avoid a defeat for me personally.
I'm sure there's quite a lot of Burnley fans in the Leeds area that will be thinking the same thing. We just had a question on the chat about a player called Jesse Lingard from Manchester United, who's been mentioned a couple of times in the press as a possible loan target, but Trail maybe seems to have gone a bit cold on that. We'll try and find out what we can and fill you in next week, but I'm not sure there's anything going on that one at the moment. It'd be an interesting one. He had quite a good pre-season. And Gemma's just pointed out that another Man United player, Federico Makeda, has just gone to Doncaster on loan. So there are players going out on loan to Championship clubs that have done things in the Premier League. So it'll be interesting to see if we can sign that sort of player. We are going to leave it there for today. Thanks for joining us. And apologies if we've broken your speakers with the lorries going past James while he was leaving work there. We'll be back tomorrow night for None and Ever Live, Burnley against Birmingham City at Turf Moor, and None and Ever Live as well on Saturday for the trip to Leeds, and the podcast will be back on Monday. The podcast will be up on iTunes tomorrow, I think, and if you subscribe, that'll download automatically, and we'll get the link on the site as well, so you can listen again. So thanks to my panel today, Kevin Robinson, Patrick Walton, James Bird and Andy Devaney. Thanks a lot for everyone for listening, and we'll be back next week. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Au revoir.
Bye.
Yes, see ya.
Arrivederci.